So I've got an idea for a video about systems thinking, which is a concept that I've wanted to teach on my YouTube channel for quite some time, but I never really had enough good examples or an overall thesis to come up with a good video idea until now. And I kind of want the thesis of the video to hinge on this quote from the management consultant Russell Acuff, who said, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here, a system is not the sum of its parts, it's the product of their interaction. And I think that is the key insight into understanding systems thinking. A system is not just the sum of its parts. It is how they interact and what comes about through their interaction. We often have this saying that 1 + 1 = 3. And this is kind of what that saying is referring to. Typically, if you're taking a sum, you would get 1 and 1, and that would make 2. But if one of your ones does one thing, and the other of your ones does another thing, and those two things interact in such a way that they generate additional value, then you can have truly 1 + 1 = 3. So that's sort of the first concept that I would like to teach in a video on systems thinking. And because I am a massive nerd, a great example that I will use in this video is the game Magic the Gathering. I think that game has a lot of great potential examples that we can create and set up where we can literally demonstrate systems thinking and how interactions can cause very big effects in an easy to understand way. So for one example, and this is going to involve some cards that people may not be familiar with, but when we're making a video, we can easily do visual examples and explain things. But we have a 3-card combo. We have one card called Scurry Oak, and when a +1/+1 counter is placed on Scurry Oak, you can make a 1/1 squirrel token. So that's one piece of a system that we might be building. This piece can make squirrels. Another piece is a card called Cathar's Crusade. And Cathar's Crusade says, whenever you gain life, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. So there's another part of our system. And already you can start to see the interactions that might happen between these two cards. If I somehow were to gain life, and we'll cover that in a second, then Cathar's Crusade's ability is going to trigger, and I'm going to get a +1/+1 counter on each creature I control, including my Scurry Oak. Once the +1/+1 counter is placed on Scurry Oak, its ability will trigger, and I will get a squirrel. Now we can add one more piece to this puzzle. A creature called Soul Warden says, whenever another creature enters the battlefield, you gain 1 life. So, when I get my squirrel token, I gain 1 life. And you can probably see where this is going. When I gain 1 life, Cathar's Crusade allows me to put a 1/1 counter on my Scurry Oak, which makes a squirrel, which gains me 1 life. And before you know it, 3 simple pieces have formed a system that gains me infinite life, infinite squirrels, and makes my Scurry Oak infinitely large. That is what we mean when we say that a system is not the sum of its parts, but the product of their interactions. Because you have these 3 pieces put together in a group that we will call a system, and together they create something, in this case, infinitely massive. In fact, 3 effects that are infinitely massive. Take even 1 piece away from the system, and the resultant interactions between the remaining 2 are much, much smaller. In this case, infinitely smaller. So that is what we mean when we say 1 + 1, in this case, 1 + 1 + 1 = infinity. More simply put, 1 + 1 = 3. But there are a lot of concepts to learn about systems thinking and systems design that will help you to design better systems in your life. One of those concepts is the idea of sequencing. So let me give you a real-world example before we get back into magic. Say I have 2 tasks to do during the day. One of them is to do my laundry, and the other one is to go run some errands. I likely have time to do both of these tasks in the day. Whether or not I do the laundry first, or if I do the errands first, I can probably get them both done. But here's where sequencing comes into play. Laundry is a task that has active time and idle time. This is often also stated in recipes. If you cook a lot, you will probably see time estimates for prep time, for cook time, and for idle time. If you're making lasagna, there's going to be some prep time for chopping up the vegetables, for browning meat, for boiling water, but then there's going to be about 45 minutes where that lasagna is in the oven. That would be your idle time. Doing laundry similarly has idle time. You're going to take maybe 30 seconds to a minute to load the clothes into the washing machine, and then you get 30 minutes of idle time. And then you're going to have another 30 seconds to a minute of transferring from the washing machine to the dryer. That is going to then lead into maybe an hour of idle time. And running errands is a different kind of task because it is active time the whole way through, and you are leaving your home. So you are leaving the proximity to everything else that you might need to do. You're leaving your computer, you're leaving your laundry, you're leaving any cleaning tasks you might have, you're going out, and you're fully engaged in running the errands. So now the question arises, how should you sequence these two actions? Well, let's assume for a second that your errands are going to take roughly an hour. The best way to sequence this would be to do your laundry first, or at least start the laundry first, go through the wash cycle, spend half an hour at home doing something else, transfer your clothes from the washer to the dryer, start that cycle, and then go do your errands. Because the idle time in the laundry task does not require your presence. So you can start it, and the task continues to happen in the background while you're out doing your errands. If you sequence it differently, if you start the wash cycle and then go do your errands, now your clothes are going to sit in the washer, damp and wet, getting mildewy, for 30 minutes until you can get home and change them over. If you don't even start your laundry at all and you go do your errands, now you come back and you have to spend an hour and a half doing laundry. And you might have time for that, but wouldn't it be so much more advantageous to have your clothes drying while you're out doing your errands? That way, when you get back, you can quickly fold them and you can do whatever else you want with the rest of your day. That is sequencing. So going back to magic, we can have an even more compelling example, at least in the context of the game, that can show you how important sequencing is. So here I have two cards in my hand. One is called Evolution Sage, and one is just a simple forest. Evolution Sage will cost me 3 mana to play, and I currently have 3 mana available on the battlefield, or 3 lands. And I have not yet played my land for turn, so I could play my forest and have 4 lands. But look at the text on Evolution Sage. It has an ability called Landfall, which basically will trigger any time land enters the battlefield under my control. And in this case, the Landfall ability is Proliferate. So whenever a land comes into the battlefield, as long as Evolution Sage is there, I'm going to get this Proliferate trigger. This will allow me to take any number of counters on anything I have, so +1/+1 counters on creatures, maybe some other things, and increment them by 1. And you can see over here, I have a 1/1 elf who happens to have a 1/1 counter on him. So that makes him a 2/2 right now. So I can play my land, and then I can play my sage, or I can play my sage, and then I can play my land. And here I'll show you how sequencing, just a simple order of operations, can vastly affect the outcome of the entire game. Say I play my land for turn first. Now I have 4 lands. I tap 3 of them, I play my sage. That's my turn. Can't really do anything else. So now I've got my sage and I've got my 2/2 elf. But if I play my sage first, now he's out on the battlefield. Now his landfall trigger is ready to go. I can play my land for turn afterwards and I'm going to get that landfall trigger. I'm going to get the proliferate ability and I'm going to be able to take the +1/+1 counter on my elf and add another one. So my elf goes from being a 2/2 to a 3-3. That's only one number. How big of a difference could that make, you might ask? Well, on my opponent's side of the battlefield, they have a 3-3 creature. If I were to pass turn, and my elf is still a 2-2, they might choose to attack me. Now, I could block with my elf, but my elf would die, and their creature would be fine. So their creature is left on the battlefield, I've lost my elf, they are now at a much more advantageous position. Conversely, if I switched my order of operations, if I play my Sage first, then I play my land, I get my landfall trigger, I pump my elf up to a 3-3. Now what happens? Well, now my elf is a threat to my opponent's creature. And they will likely not choose to attack, because even though I would lose my elf had I chose to block, they would lose their creature as well. So with one tiny sequencing decision, we have caused our opponent to hesitate, to wait an entire turn to attack, whereas they would have attacked had we done it differently. These little tiny decisions, where you're taking two actions that you're going to do both of and choosing how to sequence them, can vastly affect the outcome of a game, of your day, of really anything. And so another concept in systems thinking, bouncing off of this idea of sequencing, is that nearly everything in your life can be thought of as a system. Everything in your life is a combination of smaller pieces which all come together and interact in lots of different ways. Your day can be thought of as a system broken up into a series of events. You have choices into how you're going to sequence them. Those events themselves are systems. There are going to be people involved. There are going to be objects involved. There's time involved. There are other resources like energy and focus. So much of life can be thought of as systems. And when you think of life as a system, or when you think of any particular aspect of your life as a system, you can start to identify the variables, the pieces that go into and make up that system, and then you can identify the aspects of those variables you have control over. So another concept in systems design is the idea of the locus of control. The locus of control can be thought of as a circle. Within the circle is everything you have control over, and outside the circle is everything that you do not have control over. So the idea of locus of control is looking at the things that you do have control over, that you can influence, and asking yourself what you can do with those things. And looking at the things outside of the circle and admitting to yourself, acknowledging that you don't have control over those things. So in many cases, you shouldn't let them stress you out. You shouldn't be trying to influence them. However, you might want to look at how the things outside of your locus of control may affect the things inside the locus. And that's all that I'll talk about today. There's a lot more we could talk about with systems thinking, but this, I think, is a decent first draft outline for this kind of video.